The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Peace is not the absence of conflict, but the ability to cope with it. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I'm a total and complete shit show. And if you're wondering whether or not you're an adult child, you probably are, okay? You probably are, unless you are part of, I don't know, let's say like the 5% of the population that grew up in a totally healthy and functional family. I've met one, folks. I've met one person that seemed to come from a completely healthy and functional family. Now, what is important to note here is that dysfunction comes in all shapes and sizes. It can be very blatant. It can be very subtle. But what's even more important to note here is that the subtle forms of dysfunction can be just as detrimental and impactful as the more blatant forms. Why? Because it's not really about the dysfunction itself. It's not really about what specifically happened to you. It's more about what you came to believe about yourself and the world as a result of what happened to you. So take someone who experienced sexual abuse and then take somebody who endured emotional neglect. Both of those experiences can result in the belief of I am unlovable or I am inherently flawed and unfixable. This is a large reason why I started this damn podcast, is because there are so many millions of people out there who don't realize that the recurring issues that they are encountering in life is the result of their unresolved childhood wounds. So, welcome aboard this hot mess of a ship. We curse here. You've been warned. I'm an acquired taste. You've been warned. So, buckle the hell up, folks. So, today, we are diving deep with Sharon Morrissey. So, she is a professional mediator. She is based in Ireland. She is a conflict resolution expert who helps families, businesses, communities resolve their conflict, but with a real emphasis on the trauma component, really looking at the ways in which our childhood experiences shape how we show up in conflict. And so this is going to kickstart a multi-part series on conflict and communication. So we're going to get Sharon today, and then you're going to get, I think it's going to be two solo episodes with me the next 2 weeks, where we're really going to dive in with more detail, looking at the nuts and bolts of conflict, the way it shows up for us, and healthy ways to do it. Now, conflict is something that we adult children aren't so good at. This is something that we tend to avoid at all cost, but this isn't unique to us, right? I think that this is something that's really hard for everyone. And so I think that these episodes are going to be very relevant for every damn person out there. So I'd really appreciate it if you could share with folks. There is so much to learn and there are so many opportunities to grow as it relates to conflict. So we talk about how this is relational trauma and we heal relational trauma through relationships. And so much gets revealed about what is unresolved. What are those landmines that still live within us? The faulty beliefs that we still hold about ourselves. so much of that is revealed through conflict. And so this is why this is such an important topic for us to discuss, because it is truly such a disservice to us and our healing and our growth to avoid conflict. So that is what we are going to be doing over the next few weeks. So let's get the damn show on the road, okay? But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to damn the Join Shit Show. This is my online support community where I host multiple weekly Zoom support groups. If you're wondering when they are, we have Sundays at 3:30 p.m. Eastern, Monday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, Tuesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, and Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. There's also some other little sub-community support groups that we have going on for specific topics. This is where you can connect with other people who are doing the damn work to heal. You cannot do this work on your own. You need community. You need support. You need people who understand what it is that you're going through. So hop aboard this damn ship. Yes, you, the person that's been wanting to join for fucking forever. How about you do that right now? It's less than a dollar a day. Less than a dollar a day. You can quit after a month if you don't like it. Okay, so let's just, you know, quit the pussyfooting around and damn the Join Shit Show. Next, give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at Adult Child Pod, and last but not least, whatever you do, give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple, on Spotify. This really helps the podcast reach more people. So just think, if you don't do this, do you really want to have that weighing on your heart that you are causing somebody else to not find this podcast? You don't want that on you, do you? You don't want that. Thank you. Love you all. All right, y'all. Well, you're in for a damn treat. We've never dove into this topic before, so I'm excited. We have Sharon Morrissey. She is a family support and systemic mediation professional.
Yeah.
From Ireland.
From Ireland, yeah. Southern Ireland, yeah. Southern Ireland. So down at the very bottom of the country.
Nice. I don't even know how big Ireland is. How long would it take you to drive from the north to the south? How long would it take you to the top?
Probably about a day.
Okay. Is that where you grew up?
That would be, that's right. That would be stamping. Like you wouldn't be kind of driving madly to get from the north to the south in a day, you know? Yeah. So it's not big at all.
So how did you get into mediation?
Oh, interesting story. So I was working in family support for a long time.
When you say family support, what do you mean by that?
Okay. So
like through the court system or through counseling or what?
All of the above, really. Okay. So I got into it initially. I got into it when I was working in disadvantaged areas in different areas of the country, really. But in a less formal setting. And then as time went on, it became more formal. So we would be working in conjunction with the statutory bodies. So even though we were a voluntary organization, we were working very closely with statutory bodies. So we would be the ones going into different houses and putting plans in place in order to try and keep children within a healthy enough home system. And then when that couldn't be achieved due to addiction or mental health or all of the above, that would be our role to refer it to the statutory agencies who would then take it to the court systems. And that could end up with children being care. Now, it's quite different to, I think, the way you work in America, because in Ireland, due to our constitution, like everything is thrown at the family to try and keep children in their homes. Sometimes that is exceptionally detrimental and creates a trauma that will never, be repairable. And it continues that generational or intergenerational cycle of trauma because, there's a saying here, like, you know, monkey see, monkey do. Like, you know, if this is all you learn, this is all you know, therefore this is all you're going to create. And it takes so much to break that intergenerational trauma. So that was kind of my role there. And then my own personal history is that I was in a marriage that was not a very good marriage, and I left it. I had never heard of mediation or never heard of, well, at least I don't think, I possibly had heard words, but I had no kind of real understanding of what it was. And when my first marriage broke down, it was toxic, you know. And so I had to muddle through that without having any real support, I guess, you know, because sometimes when you don't know the questions to ask, you don't know where to go for support, you know, and it was that simple. And I was younger, obviously, at the time, significantly younger. And I didn't know the questions to ask to the point where I had been, you know, working full time. I was full time mom, yet I had no money, yet I had, you know, it was a mess. And I didn't, though, I know this is kind of different to where you are as well, but there's a social welfare system here that kind of supports people to get back on their feet. And I had never been in that system because I had always worked and, you know, I didn't know anything about it. So I had no idea where to go, who to ask. Mm-hmm. You know, there was part of the ego thing that it was like, you know, I never thought I was going to see myself in this place. I didn't want to be in this place. I think nobody kind of gets married thinking that, you know, it's going to be a shit show and it's okay to curse on this, yes?
Yeah, fuck yes.
Okay. The first place I went to was the doctor. And I said to them, I said, listen, I actually don't know what to do here. So in fairness to them, they had a whole list of services that I could contact. And I, you know, I had the capacity to be able to do that and pull all my stuff together and get us back on our feet. But the court system was absolutely freaking horrendous. It was horrendous. You know, as broken as you would be as a personal, in a personal capacity, going into that court system, you know, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. Now, my solicitor had mentioned mediation.
Your who?
My solicitor, my lawyer.
Okay.
Yeah, so sorry, that's what we call them.
Solicitor.
And
solicitor. Oh, solicitor. Yeah. I was solicitor. Like, senator. No,
Freudian slip. No, she had mentioned mediation, in fairness. But I was, I'm going to say, too afraid for a myriad of reasons to be in the same room as this other person. Mm-hmm. And there was, I suppose, like, and I just need to be careful because obviously there's other people involved in this, but like there was, you know, an air of me being physically afraid for sure. But there was also an air of I didn't want to be any more psychologically broken than I already was. And I was broken at this point because I had completely lost my sense of self. I had completely lost my feeling that I could provide for myself. I had left the family home at this point, again, for a variety of different reasons that all were contested. And I just want to be really clear that this is my perception of what happened.
Yep, okay, course.
So, you know, and mediation was not a runner for me. So at one point when we were in the family court system, the judge at the time insisted that we go to this side room and meet with my lawyer, and there was a guard there, a police person, and my ex-partner, and my ex-partner got really annoyed at something I said and banged the two hands down on, you know, the table to the point where, like, where the guard, the police person said, you know, stop. But it was very clear that mediation was going to happen. You know, it wasn't going to be a runner. So we had to truck through the court system. At the time, our oldest was very small with the relationship.
How many kids did you have?
One.
Just one.
I have two now, but at that time I had one and was very small. But actually, so even though everything got sorted eventually, very long process here in Ireland at the time was ridiculous. You had to be separated 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
Living apart. And there was this constant abuse happening.
When was this? How many years ago?
About 2003.
Okay.
And I got divorced in 2008. Yeah. Okay. But you have to remember, in Ireland, divorce was only introduced in, I could be telling you lies, but I think it's around 1995, 1996.
Really?
Yeah, yes. No, there's a story behind that. Before that, in Brehon laws, which were our very first kind of laws that were introduced at the time of ancient history, there was divorce. And then, because of the influence of the Catholic Church, Ireland being a very Catholic country at the time, it was people stayed in marriages that were abusive, that were, oh, Jesus, so unhealthy. And like partners not talking to each other for like 30 years, but, you know, going to mass together, looking like everything was rosy. And so it took a long time for the law to catch up with the fact that things aren't as they're looking at all, you know. So, yeah, I left in 2003 and it was 2008 before I was divorced. But even at that, from 2008 to 5 years ago, my ex-partner at intervals would use the court system to try and intimidate, bully. So it's very easy for somebody in Ireland to go into the family court system and say, you know, this person isn't paying access. This person is abusing my child. This person is that. And the next thing, you get a summons in the court or in the letterbox and you would have to go to court. So I remember when our daughter turned 18, I remember looking the morning of the birthday, looking at the post box on the door, you know, the mailbox, and kind of going, that's it. You can't, like, actually can't do this to me anymore. This, like, abuse, really, because there was always this level of psychological kind of abuse hanging behind it. So that brings me then to when I was working in family support back into around the time of the Celtic Tiger crash here. A lot of people who had been able to afford private practice, so going to private practitioners, couldn't afford to go to private practitioners
for therapy
anymore. Yeah, or for
For attorney?
Not so much for attorney. Well, you see, there's a family legal aid system in Ireland as well. But again, to it, you kind of get what you pay for in terms of, you know, that's not anything against anybody, but you could have one solicitor representing you today and then at the next court hearing, you could have another solicitor who has no idea of your case and you have to go through all of you know, the jigs and the reels again to tell them. So because I had been through it, I suppose the family support project that I was working in at the time were like, you know, there's lots of relationship breakdown because of money, because of lack of money, because of people were in so much trouble, you know, because people have bought lots of property and there was this crash and, you know, banks and foreclosing on businesses and foreclosing on mortgages and everything. And so that obviously had an impact on relationships. And I was given those cases. And the reason I was given those cases, it was a bit like, well, look, sure, you've been through it, so you know. So I didn't really have any formal training in it at this time, but I was looking to go and finish, because I don't think you're ever finished, but continue my education. So I remember getting one case in particular, and it really blew my mind because the work I was doing with the child was having absolutely no impact at all. And it was parental separation relationship. The child was absolutely just in a terrible position with anxiety, fear of one parent. I didn't really know anything about parental alienation. I know we don't call it that anymore. But there was all of this happening. And I kind of couldn't understand all of the work that was being done with this child and the work that was being done with the parents, but there was nothing changing. And I thought, like, there has to be something different that could be done here. And I suppose that got me thinking about my own experience and what would I have needed back then that could have made that journey through all of that a little bit more seamless and a little bit more, I'm not going to say easy because there's nothing easy about it, but just a little
less chaotic, less
less
hostile.
And even though all of those words, traumatic, chaotic, hostile, they're words that sometimes can be associated with the external, but all of this is happening internally. So I found a master's in conflict resolution and mediation, and I went and I did that, and I realized that this is where I was supposed to be, and absolutely, totally fell in love with the process and the practice of it. But even though it's an amazing process, what it did for me in terms of being able to manage my own life and be able to manage my own conflict issues and be able to understand my conflict management style has been invaluable, mm-hmm. and has brought me to a place where I think I'm probably at my most self-reflective and aware and content with myself than I have ever been in my life, even through therapy that I've been in, which I go to all of the time. This process of mediation has changed my life. Mm-hmm. And this is the process that I work, that I use when I work with clients now. So it's not just about learning, or it's not for me, mediation, he gets this, she gets this, she gets this, she gets, you know what, it's not about that. It is about understanding why we have the conflict management styles we have, and therefore, what are our triggers and blind spots that increase the possibility of increasing the conflict. And when we can figure that bit out, we become less triggered and we start to own more of the control of ourselves as opposed to being controlled by other people. And that is conflict management.
Mic drop.
Mic drop.
What did conflict look like in your home growing up?
Oh, it didn't.
It was a we don't talk kind of family.
That's exactly what it was. It was, so there was lots of conflict in our home growing up. But it either went from everybody holding hands and loving each other, or nobody talking. Mm-hmm. So we saw the conflict, but we never saw the repair. Mm-hmm. So the rupture was there, evident for everyone to see. Go ask your sister to do that. Go get your mother to do that. You get that for me, you know, this kind of thing. Whereas we never saw that repair piece. And I think we're not unusual in that, because I lecture in conflict all of the time now. That's one of the major questions that I would ask my students. And I would say to them, you know, what did it look like in your home? And it kind of goes from, you know, there was roaring and shouting and it was screaming and people would be hiding under tables. And, you know, there's some, this very physical type of thing, or there would be silence. And both are equally as traumatic to a child growing up, equally as traumatic. And any people that I am working with who will say to me, oh, our children don't know that we're fighting. Like, I'm calling bullshit on that.
Yeah, they pick up on everything.
Everything. Yeah. So they may not hear you fighting, but they will see you the day after when you are not feeling your best, when you're crying, when you're being snappy, when you're angry about something. They see all of that. Mm-hmm. And then I would peel that back with each person. So this is why I call it systemic mediation. So what did you see? And now what do you want your children to see? And how do you want your children, or, you know, the significant people in your life, how do you want them? What is the language around conflict? Because we don't have it. We don't have the language, and we don't have the language, and we don't have the language, the feeling, and the association with the feeling around conflict. So if I say to you, I'm angry, what does that look like for you? Because what it looks like for you and what it looks like for me are going to be two entirely different things. And where do you feel it? So in my mediations, when I'm mediating with couples or businesses or whatever, every person in the room is completely responsible for their own conflict management styles. I do not buy into ever, she made me do that, or he made me say that. That's bull. Because that's handing your power back to somebody else. And what we got to do here is we got to own our own shit. Then we go from there.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'd have some people say, oh, mediation is much easier than going to court. And it is, and it's back. Like, it's really not. Well, not my mediation. It's not.
Hard work. But
it's hard work. Mm-hmm. It's hard work. And for me, it's a continuous hard work. I have, still years after first marriage, I have a current husband, just like on him. It's been a current husband for a long time now, but and we like each other quite a lot still, which is absolutely wonderful. But like, we have blended family. And anybody with a blended family will know that the conflicts within that are absolutely, they're crazy stuff, you know. And I love reading these books of, you know, and they all lived happily ever after. Like, well, what a load of rubbish, like, you know. But I say, one of these days, I will get to write a book on, like, the actualities of a blended family, you know. And but a blended family is no different. And do you know what? Even using those words, just ridiculous. They make no sense, because you have two people who fall in love, and then you're expecting everybody else to love everybody else. But I mean, that's, you know, that's a bit like going into a concert and saying, yeah, you know, I want you to like me and I want you to like me.
Every single person. Like,
you know, it's, you know, it's a bit mad. But it's just, I think all of these pressures, huge freaking pressures that we put on ourselves so that society thinks it's functional. Whereas if we were all really honest, it's not. But we all have to take our own responsibility in understanding that we have a part to play in making it function incorrectly or function correctly. And I suppose that's the way I try to work to that personally, for sure. And that's the way I try to work with my clients as well. So, yeah.
In my home, it was huge blow-ups, just verbal. But I mean, I remember being a little kid and I would sit on the steps and I would just listen to my parents fight. Like, I would get like an adrenaline rush from it. I really do feel like my first addiction was like to the chaos and dysfunction, yes, like within the home. There was an element of it that made me feel safe to know, you know, exactly what was being said. But then the next morning, you know, it's, how's pot roast sound for dinner? You know what I mean? It's like, it's as if nothing happened the night before.
And that's it. And then as adults, when we go into relationships that are, you know, safe, we're bored because that dopamine hit that you describe of, you know, that adrenaline rush, that's not there. So you're kind of going, what the fuck is wrong with this person? Like, they're so, I'm so bored.
Boring. No, I know. It's
And this is where the internal mediation comes for me then. It's like trying to figure out, okay, well, actually now, what's the problem here? And identifying what's going on for me here and now. And there's a huge level of self-honesty that comes with that. Because if you're saying to yourself, I'm bored with this person, which we're all entitled to be, like, you know, there's no right or wrong answer here. But it's about figuring that out and being honest about that. And if you're bored because the person is just boring, well, that's okay, you know. And, you know, not everybody's going to be compatible, and that's okay. But if you're bored because it's
there's no conflict,
it's safe, that's a whole other level of trauma that needs to be dealt with. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, no, what I like to say is, like, when you grow up in a home where you had to walk on eggshells, like, fear becomes your base operating system, you know. Fear feels safer than feeling safe.
Absolutely. Because you can tell what's going to happen next. So I often hear people too saying, and I often hear people say, I'm such an empath. I go, no, you're not.
Hypervigilant.
You know, you're an empath because you've had to read the room since you were like a year and a half or younger. You know, because I don't actually believe that there's anything, you know, yes, we can be empathetic, but I don't personally don't believe that there is an empath personality, if that makes sense, or, you know, the hyper, what is it called, the hypersensitive personality type. I think that's another trauma response to having to read the room from very early at the time, maybe even in utero. You know, because, like, there's huge evidence now that when a mother home is stressed, when baby is in belly, that is being fed through to your child. So, and, you know, yeah, I absolutely would have personal experience of that, I guess, you know, so, yeah. So that was my journey into
mediation,
conflict, you know, and then it obviously it has training to be a mediator is one thing, like it's quite basic and it's, you know, you're using processes and, you know, all of this, but it's a little bit, it can be what you need it to be. So you can go as deep or you can keep it as surface level as you want to. And I say to clients who will ring me, you know, if you just want to pretend you like each other, like I'm all for if people never again want to speak to each other and that's their outcome, you just go right freaking ahead and that's perfect because that's your outcome and this person's not good for you and you're calling, that's, you do that, right? I am certainly not the mediator that will be saying, oh no, we all have to be best friends by the time we move. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's about that radical self-honesty. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can't stand the sight of your mother or father or brother or sister for the myriad of different reasons from growing up in the family of origin, home, life, if you can't stand your child because, you know, of whatever, that's absolutely okay. But just be honest about it.
Yeah.
Because if you're not honest about it, that conflict will keep coming up.
Yeah.
And if it is a case that you don't want to have relationships with these people, don't. Don't. Just because they're blood relatives, don't.
Yeah.
And that sometimes can, a lot of times, is a bitter pill for people to swallow. Now, I'd never advise that to people, but I mean, what I do sometimes say to people is, okay, so if this person wasn't related to you, if this person wasn't your son, for example, and it was somebody who was renting a room in your house and they were behaving the way that they're behaving and they were speaking to you and dealing with you in the way that they are, would you continue to allow them to rent a room in your house?
Mm.
And the answer to that would be no way would I. And it's the same in my brain. Maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but I think we have to sometimes.
I think also too that, especially if we're like doing the, you know, healing childhood wounds, that for some people too, they can kind of take a step back, you know, have a kind of a no contact period of time they are healing their wounds, because it can be extremely challenging, almost impossible to heal those wounds if you're constantly being re-triggered by the people that are associated. But for some people, you can then get to a place where, you know, you've done enough healing to where you can put some boundaries in place to make it work a certain way, you know, but for other people, they'll never be able to get to that. And that's fine too.
Absolutely. And I know I was listening to some of your stuff already, and you know, that came up very strongly in that personally there, you know, there are people that I won't have conflict with again.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I embarked on a healing journey, and I hate this word scapegoat, like I hate all of this kind of language, but it was almost like, well, you're the one with the problem, so therefore you're mad and there's something wrong with you. Actually, we're all fine.
Yeah.
See, all of us here, we're fine because we're all saying the same thing. Like it was grand. Everything was, you know, grand. That's a real Irish word, like it was all grand. Mm-hmm. And you're the one giving out about X, Y, and Z. So, you know, we're fine. It's all you, you know, and that's a really, like, there's a huge amount of grief that goes with that for people, and isolation and mental health difficulties and issues in terms of, you know, it's really easy to go down your own route of addiction. In that path, be it to work. Jesus, I was absolutely like work. Like, just give it to me, bring it on. I can do it. Like, whatever, you know, send it this way. So I didn't have to think. And I still had to be very careful with that. Very careful with my boundaries around work. Because I love what I do, number one, right? So that's one thing. But the other thing is, like, I love what I do to the detriment of spending time with my current husband, or, you know, that kind of thing. So where am I looking after our relationship or not, you know, in that? So again, to it, I go back to the mediation piece where I'm looking at it through that lens. These are the issues. The issues are, I love what I want. I love what I do. I love my work. I love helping people. The impact of doing that is I'm doing it like 18 hours a day. Okay. And the other six, I'm absolutely white, right? And I go back and I do it again. So where is the time for the significant others in my life? There is not. So I'm putting other people ahead of the significant people in my life, which is going to bring me to a place that is going to have me here having issues like the people I work with, mm-hmm. or I have to go back. And this is what the post social mediation has done. It has taken it from a very kind of, for me, and maybe that's just at my level of healing now, which I believe we never get healed, right? But we just get to manage it a little bit better. It's more logical for me. And I love the logic of mediation. I love it. I have a logical brain. My husband would often say at times, you know, that I'm a very kind of a masculine, give me a problem, I will come up with the solution. I don't a lot of times get into the emotionality of it. But I think that's a lot of years of working in family support where you lose families to merger, to suicide, to, you know, drug addiction, to, you know, and so that definitely hardens a personality. But if I see a dog being harmed in the street, I'm in floods of tears. I can't deal with it at all, you know. So, but I'm sure that says a lot about me.
Can you break down you don't have to go into a ton of detail, but could you break down what are there four conflict styles? Are there four?
I can. Do you know, I think this can be, I don't think there's any one conflict style, right? Mm-hmm. For the simple reason, I think we can't be, you know, there's authoritarian, there's authoritative, there's, you know, there's passive aggressive, there's just so many different conflict styles. And it depends what you look at, like it depends what article you're reading, all of those things. I think we have the ability to be all of those. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a default one, but the default one is going to come back to what did I learn as a kid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if I am completely passive, for example, I'm going to be the one hiding under the table when, you know, there's a fight going on, or I'm going to be under the stairs. I'm going to have my hands over my ears and I'm going to just, and come out the next day and be this avid people pleaser. Mom, we're going to get me dad. You know, I'll make it all fine. Everything will be right. So there's that. Or then there's the real aggressive type, you know, if you can't beat them, join them kind of thing. Or I want, you know, give it to me. I just like there's I deserve, you know, we kind of almost like bordering on narcissists. And I know we don't like using those words either, but that narcissism or antagonistic relational patterns. And then, you know, there's the kind of the collaborative, oh yeah, let's all work together. Let's, you know, everything is going to be fabulous. But sometimes, oftentimes in the collaborative, nobody's really happy because we've all had to give a little. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a little bit, you're kind of going, yeah, it's okay, like, it works, it's okay, but I was happy. Whereas if there's the honesty and the authenticity, and this again is just my belief, right? If there's that honesty and clarity and authenticity in saying, this is what I believe is going to work best, and you believe something else is going to work best, and can we discuss in a rational way, can you show me why you think this is going to work best? And I'm not getting triggered by you showing me. And I am self-aware enough that if you put that, argument is the wrong word, but if you put that case to me in a way that makes sense in my logical brain, and I am aware enough to be able to go, do you know what? I think you might be right there. It's about communication. It's not about what conflict management. I really don't believe it's about what conflict management style is. It's about your method and your ability to communicate authentically and respectfully for yourself, to yourself, about yourself, and to the other people that you need to have these discussions with.
Absolutely. I just think about how for a lot of people, what they're reacting to in conflict has nothing to do with the actual conflict at hand, and how we really do go into, you know, a trauma response. So much of it is projection. When we go into that emotional flashback and logic really does go out the window, you go into that fight flight state and you have no idea what you're actually responding to or reacting to. Is it hard? Like, so is that something that is, how is that process as far as like getting the clients and the people that you work with to like, to understand that, to be able, because I would think that before you could even work on conflict resolution, one has to be able to identify when they're in a trauma response.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing.
And then working through that some too, right? Like being like getting some healing there, because you could be aware of it. But again, when you're in that moment, you can't really do anything. So I would think that before you can really even work on any sort of conflict resolution, you have to be able to acknowledge and heal some as far as like when you're getting into a triggered space and going into a trauma response.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
So, how do you explain that to your, how do you explain that to clients?
Do you know how many times I've set the intention that on Sunday, I'm going to get up, I'm going to plan my meals out for the week, I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to get everything that I need, I'm going to come home, I'm going to make all my meals for the week. Do you know how many times I've actually been successful in doing that? Not once, folks, okay? Not one single time. But alas, I have found the perfect solution. Meet Sunbasket, a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your damn door. You get to pick and choose what you're in the mood for every week. Maybe one week you're feeling Mediterranean, maybe another week you're feeling a little carb consciousness. I like the sound of that. I most recently made, it was a spinach and strawberry salad with steak. It was damn good. So go to sunbasket.com/adultchild today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/adultchild to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. All right, my shit show ladies, let me tell you about how I can make getting dressed so much easier for you. Armoire is a clothing rental membership where you get to build your perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you gotta do is take a 5-minute style quiz and then select from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new to you styles. So I love this because I'm on video quite often on interviews and social media content, and I don't want people to be like, is that the only shirt that this girl owns? I also would not consider myself in the know of what's hot and what's not. But with Armoire, I get to pretend like I'm a fashionista. So this is perfect for working moms, for stay-at-home moms, for any women who just don't feel like going to the store. Now, right now, you shit show ladies can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off your first month. So that is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/adultchild. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/adultchild to get 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear ever again. Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my young younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
So I do what I call it is like a readiness for mediation session. Mm-hmm. So even though mediators don't have to be counselors, they don't have to be, I have training in counseling, I have training in trauma, I have training in lots of different things. I don't know how people who just do mediation training, and maybe they don't do it to the level I do it, right? You know, but I'm sorry, she can hear my dog barking in the
background. You're fine, it's totally fine.
So that readiness for mediation session is vital. So for example, if you go back to using my story with the solicitor, the lawyer had asked me to go to mediation. I was like, there's no freaking way I can get along with this person because of X, Y, and Z reasons. Completely in a flight response. Okay. Whereas if I had somebody to say, okay, well, if I can work with you, if I can prepare you to be in that room, if I can create the safety in the room, the psychological safety in the room, whereby, and physical safety, so let's not pretend, you know, the physical safety isn't an issue. If I can create and ensure that's there for both of you, this is going to be a space whereby you're going to get more for yourself in terms of healing than just the outcome. So what I will do is I will spend some time speaking to each person individually. Mm-hmm. And that's put into the mediation sessions. So each person individually, and then the parts that we have to do, the legal parts, that has to be done together insofar as possible. If there is a real physical reason that we shouldn't be doing that, well, then that's something else. And then if people want to be separated and that work continues through the separation, you know, being separated in the room, sorry, and that work continues through it, you know, so tell me when person A says this to you, why it triggers you. Mm-hmm. Or when they look, because usually it's not something that somebody says, it's something that somebody does, be it with their face, be it with they move on the chair, be it with a cough, whatever it is.
Well, or what about like a tone of voice?
Absolutely. Yeah. Even though there's something is moved on the desk, even when the door is shut on the way out. When you're living on a kind of that, on eggshells, when you're living on your nerves, you know these intimate things. For the mediator to be tuned in enough to maybe not see what just happened, but to be able to feel the response of the other person. Mm. Have they shut down? Have they withdrawn? Have they stopped talking? Have they, you know, are they looking down? Are they fiddling with the paper? Are they anxious? Like, can I feel that shift in the room? And again, being able to create the space where I'm saying to the other person, what just happened there? And for them to trust me enough to tell me.
Can you give me, do you have any good stories? You want to give me good examples? Anything come to mind?
To just kind of...
Like related to this, like something example. That you noticed course, in the room and then them, you saying what was that about?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a couple I was working with and everything seemed to be going okay. I suppose I was a bit taken aback that it was going as okay as it was. It's not what I had expected, you know. So I always kind of start questioning stuff like that. And it was the woman in this case literally just pushed back the chair, just a fraction. Like just a fraction, and did something like that on the chair. And instantly, I felt something change. I can't give you an example, but I just felt something changed. And so I watched for a couple of seconds. And then I said, do you know what? I think now may be a good time to split into single sessions or you know, and so like, Andrea, you go get a cup of tea and I'll talk to Sharon there for a minute, you know, and then we'll swap over. And I'd be quite direct. Okay, so I don't do the whole, you know, so is everything okay? Yeah, yeah. So I just ask the question straight out, which is that, you know, like, Andrea, I noticed when Sharon moved her chair back this way, you shut down. What happened there? And it turned out that the woman in this relationship had said that, you know, if something like this happens, if the particular thing we were discussing, I would not let you see your children. I will stop you seeing your children. I will say that you have done X, Y, and Z. Now, thankfully, that person was able to say that to me because I had created that safe space. But if that person had said, you know, this isn't going to work, this person is going to take my children from me, I am going to leave here and I am going to drive my car into a wall on the way home. I don't want to be here anymore. Thankfully, I had training done. It's a FIST training, it's called here. It's just to support people who are in their suicidal state. So at that point, I quite simply, and I noticed this a bit more actually. So for women, and I'll come back to it in a second, but for women, a lot of it is there's a physical aspect to it. It's, you know, there is a physical aspect to maybe the sphere. For men, there's a psychological aspect in the fear. So whereby, so I you know, just said, okay, you stay right there. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to end the session. Right. So I said, will you be okay if I bring the other person back in for a moment and just say, I think, listen, we have enough done for today. And will you stay with me? And they said, yeah, okay, that's fine. So I did that. I ended the session. It was all very kind of amicable, nothing, you know, that indicated any sort of change in me, whatever. So the person, the woman in this case, left. I was left with the man, and we were able to put an intervention in place where, safely, he was able to get himself home. We were able to set up supports where he could go to more in-depth counseling supports and, you know, have that. And that's not unusual to happen in any case, really, to be honest. There is a thing here in Ireland where they would say that you're not supposed to mediate domestic abuse cases. And I challenge that a bit. I mean, there's some cases, obviously, would be too dangerous. Like, for example, if there's a barring order in place, there is a legal order in place that I can't mediate that because they can't be in a certain, you know, space of one another. But if there isn't a barring order in place, I would do something like, I just feel that by doing that, we're further disempowering victims. And so if somebody says, I want to do mediation, and you have a mediator say, no, I can't, because, you know, we're not supposed to mediate domestic abuse cases. But I think that's further, as I say, disempowering and making somebody feel even smaller than they do already. And I speak from personal, you know, experience in this. So people don't need to be in the same room at any point during the mediation or during the conflict resolution process. So once I have two exits, one in, one out, once I can take one person to their car, same thing, get them gone first, and the other person. So once I have done, you know, kind of a bit of a recce mission to see that there's, if I'm dialing a particular number, I've got somebody on hand as quickly as I possibly can. You know, once I have all of those safety checks and balances in place, I don't see why it can't be done, but it has to be done safely. So there's a huge amount of examples, you know, that could be given. But like, for somebody to push a chair, and it's not the thing that happens. It's the change in atmosphere. And it's only by knowing your client. Now, it's not that I intimately know my clients all of the time. Sometimes I don't. But most of the times I will have had at least two, if not three, individual calls with each person before we get into the room. So that I can tell kind of what's normal. But again, it's sometimes there's some people you can't mediate with. And the people you can't mediate with typically have no ability to self-reflect or be self-aware.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is like, at what point do you say, all right, this is not going to work. This is more like, how much evidence do you need before? It's kind of like when people want to go to like family therapy with their parents. Yeah. Like my therapist would never recommend that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I suppose because of these calls that I would have individually with people beforehand.
I have a question before you answer this. Are you being hired on behalf of one of the?
No, they both have to voluntarily.
They both have to agree.
Yeah.
Got it.
And we don't have court appointed mediations. So the Mediation Act here, 2017, says that it absolutely has to be voluntarily. So that both parties voluntarily wish to attend. Any cases, in sometimes a court will send you a case to mediate, right? For whatever reason. And I would safely say 9 times out of 10, there's not going to be a positive outcome to that. Because they don't want, none of us want to be told what to do.
Yeah.
You know? So like if I'm saying to you, Sharon, get into mediation and get it sorted. It tends to happen a little bit more in business cases. Mm-hmm. Or community cases, we'll say, or neighborhood cases, you know, if there's mm-hmm. somebody fighting over a boundary wall or something like that, mm-hmm. less so in family cases. And this is why our court system is so chock-a-block, like with these cases that just come back in again. So there's a maintenance order put in place by the courts, and then like the person doesn't pay the maintenance, and then, you know, the other person takes it back in again, and there's another order made, or there's a variation order made, and then they don't hear that, and then they're back in again. You know, and it's blocking everything up, where all of this, I believe, should be done in mediation, because if you have a kid with someone, mm-hmm. at a minimum, you're going to have 18 years of having to have some level of contact with mm-hmm. this person, you know, and actually that's really a lifetime, because there could be, you know, weddings, graduations, bar mitzvahs, you know, all of those
grandkids.
Things. And kids, grandkids, exactly. Mm-hmm. So like, it's very important to be aware and to take time in figuring out who you want to have as the father or mother of your children. You know what I mean? So it's not as simple as, oh yeah, we fell in love over a weekend and we got married 6 weeks later. And sometimes they work out really great, and that's fantastic. But 9 times out of 10, or maybe 8 times out of 10, they don't, you know? So it's kind of important to, but there again, you're back to knowing yourself and knowing what it is you will and will not put up with. And if you come from a background, if any of us come from a background where conflict was rife in our house, where he who shouted the loudest got the most, or he who banged the door, she who banged the door, kicked whatever, got more than the other person. That's normal for you when you're going to be taking that into your relationship. But wherein is that cycle broken? So a lot of it is, I believe, having worked in schools and working in schools and trying to... I remember working in, I'm not quite sure what age school... or what's the name of the school, but if I say to you that kids from about maybe 13 to 16, what would that be in America? Is it like middle school or?
13 to 16? And yeah, that's like, almost, it's the end of middle school, beginning of high school.
High school, okay. So like, you know, doing some work in the school, and when I said to them, okay, let's go talk about conflict, they were like, oh, what? What's conflict? Like having a war. Is that a war? Is that what that means? And I'm like, going, yeah, it is a war. But what about having a war in your home? What does that look like? Mm. You know, whereas they associated it with things that they see on the telly.
Yeah.
But they didn't associate it with what was happening internally and externally. And you can bring it back to even kids going through puberty. That's an internal war. That's a mediation that has to be had every freaking day. Do you know? So, and parents, and I do a huge amount of that work, parent-child mediations, you know, where your kid gets to 13, 14, 15, 16, they hate you. Obviously, there's a lot of that's very normal,
yep.
right? But then there's a lot of, you know, if my kid is hating on me and I'm giving them, you know, if I'm ignoring them or if I'm giving them a a punch, or if I'm, you know, how am I handling that? Am I creating the space where they can come and tell me they hate me in a safe way, and I'm not taking it personally, you know, and it's not triggering something in me. Like if I said that to my mother, you know, can you imagine what that would look like? You know, that it would fly. So it's just so much, there's so much work around it that needs to be done. And it's, for me, it's so basic that I just don't understand like why it's not being done, you know, in a way that's really meaningful. There's no point in having these courses in school that go from, because I know here in Ireland, they do them in preschool. So kind of from maybe 3-ish to up to maybe 12, you know, whatever that is in America. And then it stops. Just about when you're, just when you're entering puberty, they kind of go, oh yeah, you don't need to worry about conflict anymore. You've it done. You're like, yeah, maybe not. Maybe we should be concentrating a little bit more here, you know? Because then you're sending out adults into the world who just don't know how to deal with it.
So.
Was there anything specific, I suppose, maybe that?
What I asked you was, how do you know when, at what point do you determine when you can't work with a couple?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So, yeah, in those kind of 3 sessions that I would have individually with people, I would figure out that, yeah, okay, this is not going to work out. Yes. Because you'll hear things like, well, you know, it's all Sharon's fault because she just doesn't listen. And then you could have the other person say, you know, I tried to explain it and I tried to explain it, but, you know, they don't hear. So I explain it, but they don't hear. Or, and again, sometimes it's a communication thing. And if you have somebody like me trying to reframe it for the person so that they can hear it. But if somebody believes that they are right, and as I said, if they have no capacity to self-reflect or be aware, it's not going to work. It's not going to work because they won't stick to it. And they may drive the process on a lot, particularly. So in Ireland, again, because it's voluntary, I would always say to people, right, people sometimes won't be able to pay 50-50. Mine's a private service, so they won't be able to pay 50-50 in relation to that, particularly if you've one parent who stands at home looking after kids and the other parent out working. So, you know, however it breaks down, but I am insistent that each party pays something, because by doing that, they're investing in the process. And if you have one person who says, no, I'm not paying anything, they wanted me to go, I'm here, I know it's not going to work. Because they have no intention in investing. Actually, it's almost used as an abuse tool because it's expensive. Mediation is expensive. That I'm going to keep doing this until they don't have any money left.
Yeah.
And I do that in the course as well. So it's, so you know, you can tell pretty quickly if it's going to work or not.
I guess the fact that they both have to pay probably does kind of weed out a lot of,
It does. And it weeds out a lot of my time because if I have somebody saying to me, yeah, no, I can't afford it, but I'm like, okay, well, there's a free mediation service. You can go there, you know? But you're going to be waiting 9 months and it's not going to work. You know, it's going to be focused solely as such on the conflict. It's not going to be so focused on why and how you can, you know, take this into the future with you as a tool. But there's your other option. You know, so like there are options for people. And mine is just one of many.
What about with like for parents listening right now, parents are going through a separation or what do you think is most important for them to understand or mistakes made most detrimental to kids? Like, what do you think is important for people to know?
2 things. Divorce doesn't harm children. The conflict around divorce harms children. Okay? That's one thing. The second thing is age and stage appropriately. Be honest with your kids. Stop pretending that your kids don't know. They freaking know. They know. And in a way that you are able, now please hear this. When we are going through separation or divorce like this, when we are in conflict with our family of origin, when we're in conflict with our partner, when there's conflict in our workplace, we are so, what's the word I'm looking for? We are so kind of in our head trying to think of alternative ways to make it work. We're trying to manage it in our heads that we're not emotionally available to our children in a way that we may previously be, right? Parenting is good enough. Can you be a good enough parent in the times when you are barely able to hold it together for yourself? You don't need to be adding that cross on your back saying like, I'm a shit mother, I'm a shit father because I can't be there for my child in what they're used to before and how, you know, we only need to be good enough.
Yeah.
And by being honest in an age like, we don't want to be honest doing things like your father's an asshole and he went off with the girl from his job. That's not being honest. It may be the truth, yeah. Right? But it's not appropriate to share that with your children. Appropriate to share with your children is something along the lines of, we are finding it really difficult to communicate in a healthy way right now. Mom and dad can't talk to each other in a way that's really healthy right now. We're working on it. We're going to see what we can do. We're going to seek some help from a mediator or a counselor or, you know, whatever. We don't know what's going to happen, but we will tell you every step of the way. One of the most, I think, detrimental things that I have in my career has been, mom and dad both love you, but we don't love each other anymore. What does the child think immediately? Oh, so they've stopped loving each other, so I better be a really nice and good person, because if they don't love each other, they're going to stop loving me too. We can't put that level of stress on children. Something along the lines of like, it's your dad, it's your mom. They're always going to be really special to me because it's your dad. And our children are made up of 50% mom, 50% dad. And we're really, you know, we're struggling to be happy together. And we think that, you know, maybe we might be happier apart. We're still mom and dad. Is age and stage appropriate? I've actually written a book about that. And it's for children, but it's from the perspective, but it's to kind of teach parents almost, you know, the things that are happening for our kids in that. But the whole thing of, you know, your other parent is an asshole because they did this and this. Kids don't need to hear that. I suppose one of the things that I found really awful over the last, 6 years, I think at this stage, is watching the Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt thing, you know, playing out. And I speak to this sometimes because it's, you know, it's a case that's such a high profile case, you know. And having kids wanting to drop the second name. At some point, those kids are going to think, so now it's a statement of identity. It's them proving I can. I want to, so I can, you know. But what happens in a few years' time when they think about it, hopefully in some safe therapeutic space, when they think, for whatever reason, I've dropped that name, so half of me must be bad. Okay, so that seems to have hit for you a little bit.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking, I was just thinking about somebody that I know.
Yeah.
What about, Horrendous. Yeah.
No, the book I have written about, it's called That's Not My Ending, it's a book. And I'm not plugging it up because I need to do some more work, like it's published, but I need to republish it because it's very, a friend of mine, a darling friend of mine said to me, it's very white, Sharon. It's very white, you know. So I have it now, again, I'm going to just be gentle on myself and say like we're significantly more multicultural than we were when I was growing up. You know, I was about 12 before I saw my first person of color, right? Mm-hmm. So I know that's crazy, you know, in the scheme of things now. So I need to work on that and I need to, you know, put more experience and, you know, into it. But as a first run out, the feedback has been, I didn't know we were doing this to our kids. And that's what I need people to understand.
Yeah.
And whilst I always, for me personally, I always said it's really important to have a relationship with dad. You know, it's really important, you know, the relationship with your ex, then the family is really important. That actually backfired on me a little bit as well in terms of if I said black, the other people would have said white, you know, and
yeah, exactly.
It became very difficult, but it's possible. It is possible. And I'm not, listen, I'm not pimping myself up here as a poster girl. Believe me, I'm not. Oh man, I'm not. It is possible to step out of that ring when you become aware of your own conflict management triggers. And so when I became aware of souls in the last few years, I was like, I'm not going to fight with you about this. If this is what you want to do and you are safe, you do that. Because there are natural consequences for children, again, age and stage appropriately, you know, that by me stopping them is probably going to have a more significant detrimental effect than children finding out for themselves that, oh yeah, I tried that, I was allowed to try that, mom or daddy allowed me to try that, made a big balls of it, but do you know what, at least now I know. You know.
Okay, two questions.
Yes.
One, when somebody gets triggered, there's conflict, how do you advise them to determine what part of this is related to the actual situation at hand and what part of this is something that's getting triggered that is unresolved from my past before they go and, you know,
respond.
Express that their feelings are hurt or, yeah, how does one sift that out?
Brilliant question. I sound like a broken record. One of the best things that was ever taught to me in my career was practice pause. And I'm sure you would have heard that saying. So, something happens in my life and I feel like I want to just kill someone, right? I just want to choke them with my bare hands,
right?
Because I would be feisty. Red hair brings feistiness, and I will say to them, and you just let that with me for a couple of minutes and I'll come back to you. Mm-hmm. Have a toolkit of phrases, right? So the kids know here that, so if it's going on, and if I do this, just this, they will know. We need to go. We need to leave her be. So it's, you know, then it's kind of, they know. So those discussions need to be had when things are calm.
Mm-hmm.
No point having those discussions when things are
heated. Mm-hmm.
So we talk about this here. And this is only in the last few years, like as I say, since I started practicing this work. And I'll have the kids say to me, Bob, don't be doing that mediation shit with us now, right? So, you know, but it's, we have to do it when things are calm. Listen. When you're really wound up about something, what way can I support you? Or is that me leaving you alone? And this can be done in workplaces, and this can be done with family of origin. And you talked earlier about boundaries. So this is what this is. This is putting in place this boundary. And even if the other person doesn't want to listen to that boundary, it's still my boundary. It's still for me to enforce that. So if the, now, the other thing that's really important to say in terms of conflict doesn't have to be loud. Conflict isn't loud, actually. Mm-hmm. Conflict is not loud. So if something is an issue, it should be a case where I can sit down with you and I can say to you, listen, Andrea, when this happened yesterday, it didn't sit really well with me. And I'd like to be able to speak to you about that. Something happens in work and, you know, there's possibly not that space to be able to do it immediately. But there is a space where we have a line management system, where we have, you know, support and supervision system or whatever, where you're sitting to, or staff meetings or whatever, however it works. We need to figure out how we're going to work together as a team. So therefore, if there is a conflict in our team, Andrea, what works for you? Sharon, what works for you? Mary, what works for you? And we need to be creating almost like a mediated agreement, a contract that this conflict doesn't need to be loud. This conflict can be done. So, you know, in a workplace, it's case that you and I initially have the conversation first. That doesn't work, we'll bring an airline manager. If that doesn't work, we have a disciplinary policy procedure kind of situation we can work to. It's more or less the same in families. Family of origin, once you create that boundary, okay? Family of origins can be a little bit more difficult because we all know the triggers and the buttons, and we all fall into a role that we grew up in, I guess. Mm-hmm. So in those cases, in some cases, there is no, you know, there is no way of being able to say to a parent or a brother or sister, or, you know, or granny or whoever, you know, I don't like it when you do this, you know, because if the boundary, the line in the sand would be just cleared out, it would be pushed and it would be like, oh God, you're off sensitive. And, or you take everything to heart and you know all of these kind of things. So in those cases, it's about me creating the boundary for myself. When granny says, I had a granny who, I'm not the, right? So I had a granny who would say, Jesus, you're a fine, strong girl, right? I.e., you're heavy, right? So, and that used to really upset me, like, because I was only small, and it used to really upset me. So for a finish, I used to have to say to myself, well, when she says this, that's about her. It's not about me. I've asked her to stop. She hasn't stopped. So therefore, that's not about me. That's her. Mm-hmm. But there again is back to your level of self-reflection and awareness. So that's where the majority of the work has to be done, on the self. Mm-hmm. Once we can manage ourselves, once we know who we are ourselves, when we're very clear on what our ethics, our morals, our, and they can be whatever. You know, there's no judgment in any of that for anything. But once we're very clear on who we are, other people's opinions of us really won't matter a whole lot.
Well, I feel like I'm definitely going to have you back on because, like, there's like a million bajillion questions. And yeah, I'm sure I'm going to get so many fucking questions from people too when they hear this. So this is amazing. Seriously, so good. Okay, what do you want to push, promote, share with the audience? I mean, obviously you're in Ireland and I'm sure I have listeners there for sure. But
and listen, I do huge amounts of work in Florida.
Do you?
Funnily enough.
Oh, yeah, amazing. So you work with people anywhere. Oh, I love that. Yeah. Okay, wonderful. Yeah, yeah.
Zoom, you know, the pandemic it had its perks. Yeah, so I do huge amount of work with a group of Georgia and interculturally or internationally, really, at this point. So yeah, anybody who wants to reach out to me, it's Sharon Morrissey Mediation Services at gmail.com.
I'll put all your contact info in the show notes, your website.
That's
and everything.
Fine. I'll send you on all of it because I changed the name of the website because Ireland is funny in that they don't like words like conflict. I think they're a bit hard, you know? So we had to go, I love it. I just think
what are you supposed to say?
It's not very much like it is. It does what it says on the tin. You know what I mean? But no, so I just changed it to a personal brand, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I think at this stage, I've kind of done as much work. I've done a lot of work. So people kind of know when they see my name coming up, it's like, there's your warrant after about, give it out again. So I just changed it. So I will send you the proper email details and website details and stuff. Okay. I'll do that now this minute. And, you know, it is literally reach out on email and we set up Zoom calls and we do exactly as I spoke to. We have like a couple of sessions on Zoom where we figure out if we like each other, if we can work together. If you don't like somebody, you're not going to work well with them. And so when that happens, you know, you're not going to be able to build trust or rapport and all those kind of things. And if we do like each other, we work together. And if we don't like each other, there's nothing lost. So I'm a pretty simple kind of gal. I'm straightforward. It's, you know, what you see is what you get. And, you know, some people don't like that. Some people like to be kind of molded a bit. I'm not that girl.
And me neither. I think we're very similar. As I say, I'm an acquired taste.
Yes, exactly. I'm the same. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. This is awesome.
Oh, you're so
good.
Thank you so much.